Welcome to Ancient Future Faith with Dr. Chris Alford, pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento. Just what is ancient future Christian faith? Join Chris each week as he talks with special guests about a refreshing renewal in evangelical worship and spirituality that's helping many believers get in touch with their ancient Christian heritage. Now, with another look at how the road to the evangelical future runs through the ancient past, here's Dr. Chris Alford.
Well, hi there, folks, and welcome back to another edition of Ancient Future Faith. It's a delight to have you listening in, especially in these days where you might be cooped up in your house and isolating and sheltering in place. And I'm hoping that today's conversation will be especially encouraging to you. Each week, we bring you a wide variety of guests to talk about this thing called Ancient Future Faith. And today is no exception, although a little maybe different than before. Dr. Steve Pinson is with us. Steve, hi, welcome.
Hi, Chris.
It is wonderful to have you here. And this is your first time doing the radio program, isn't it?
It is, but it's a pleasure to be here with you and your listeners.
Well, I'm grateful for you to be here. Folks, Dr. Pinson is not only, I'm proud to say, a dear friend, and also one of the founding elders of our church, Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community. He's also a physician, and for many years has been a physician, and his speciality is, well, I'll let him tell it. Steve, tell us just a little bit about you and your background, and then I really want to talk with you about, oh golly, there's several things on my mind, how Christianity and faith overlap in your profession in the medical world. And also, I kind of just want to pick your brains about how you think this is going to affect not only the medical field, but maybe also the church going forward. But first, let's get to know you.
Well, I was not raised in a particularly Christian home. I wouldn't have considered myself now a Christian as a child. But prior to starting medical school, I became a believer. And following that, I really felt that the call on my life was to minister through a profession in healthcare.
Yeah.
So attended medical school and then decided that anesthesiology would be the pursuit that God had for me. And so pursued a career after a residency in anesthesia here at UC Davis Medical Center in Sacramento with practice here in Sacramento, and have been doing so for almost 30 years.
I was going to say, it's nearly 30 years, isn't it, that you've been putting people to sleep?
Yes, I put people to sleep very well, hopefully not your radio listeners.
Oh, well, I'm a pastor, so I know something about putting people to sleep as well. Well, it's delightful to have you. And as an anesthesiologist, gosh, you're involved in, I guess, a wide variety of surgeries and procedures. Yeah, so it's not just one thing. There's probably a lot of variety.
No, there's a whole host of things which run the gamut all the way from specializing in things like pediatric anesthesia, cardiac anesthesia for heart surgery. But my particular subspecialty would be obstetric anesthesia, and also critical care anesthesia is a subspecialty of the practice. And so a number of anesthesiologists are throughout the country at this point in time being involved with taking care of COVID-19 patients in intensive care units. And of course, we share the need for using ventilators both in the intensive care unit and in the operating rooms where we're taking care of patients. In fact, the federal government has called upon our society to try to identify opportunities to be able to use our skills and our equipment in trying to meet this current pandemic.
Well, I want to make sure we get that connection between critical care anesthesiology and what's going on around the country. So just define for us, what makes someone in critical care? Is that ICU only or other
things? Yeah, in particular, it's taking care of patients that their health needs are so critical that they've been placed in an intensive care unit and need much more focused care, and frequently including ventilator care.
Before we talk about how COVID-19 has undoubtedly affected you and your practice and folks you're bumping into in the hospitals, could you talk just a little bit about the overlay of Christian faith and your profession? Do they collide? Do you have to leave it at home?
Yeah, that's an interesting subject. Clearly, it's something that I felt was a call on my life, and I certainly have the opportunity to pray for my patients, whether I've disclosed to them that I'm going to be praying for them during our time together or not. But there are opportunities, if patients are accepting of that, to say, may I pray for you during the surgery, or may I pray for you prior to or going into surgery?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something that's in many places overtly stopped.
Yeah.
But you do have to be careful that you're not necessarily offending people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's not only the opportunity to minister to the patients that I'm taking care of, almost as importantly, is providing a witness to the people with whom I'm interacting within the own medical community I'm working. And so their opportunity to watch me minister to people who are about to go into surgery is a witness to them as well.
Yeah, for sure. You're listening to Ancient Future Faith. It's a weekly program brought to you by Epiclesis, an Ancient Future Faith community evangelical church here in Sacramento, California. My name is Chris Alford, and I'm the blessed guy who's the pastor of that church. And on the phone with me today is not only a friend and not only a founding elder of our church, but also a local physician. He is an anesthesiologist with 30 years of experience of being in hospitals and healthcare. And I thought especially during this time of COVID and all of the shelter in place and a lot of questions and chaos and even maybe fear about this, it would be really good to have a medical professional on, one whom I know and trust and who can give us sort of two perspectives, what it's like to be in the healthcare world, that profession, but also overlaying and including what it is to be Christian in that environment. Steve, let's talk a little bit about sort of nuts and bolts, how this thing has affected the care that's going on in hospitals right now.
Sure. The initial projections, of course, were that without mitigation or containment measures, that COVID-19 was going to spread to a point where it would overwhelm the healthcare system with potentially up to more than 2 million deaths within the United States in a short period of time. And unlike some previous pandemics, regular flu, swine flu, measles that have taken over our country at times in the past, this particular virus seems to spread in a way that is more infectious, in many cases more lethal, and more quickly, partly because there are so many asymptomatic people who are shedding the virus either before they develop symptoms or don't have symptoms. Mm-hmm. So what it's meant is we have a hospital system that could easily have been overwhelmed by the numbers of patients presenting simultaneously.
Yeah.
So large measures were taken nationally in hospitals to provide capacity to be able to meet that need should the need come. So the initial steps were stopping all elective surgery and trying to preserve as much equipment and identify locations for as much equipment as possible to meet those needs, to the point of deciding that in our particular hospital, we were going to need a second code blue team because we were potentially facing a scenario of multiple code blues simultaneously. Mm-hmm. What it's meant for many physicians, anesthesiologists included, in areas where the epidemic has not gone exponential as it has in New York, is that there's been a large drop in volume. So our particular practice, of which there are about 100 anesthesiologists, has seen volume go to 25% of surgical volume. So there's been a lot of not working, but there's also been a fair amount of, as we're in the hospital, trying to minimize the opportunity to spread it within the hospital. So large infection prevention.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Is that more than what you have been accustomed to? I suppose things look different when you come to work now.
No, absolutely. I will tell you that none of the visitors nor the staff enter the hospital without being scanned for their temperature, which is not what we have been accustomed to doing.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing the path that COVID patients will take, which elevators are patient elevators, I will typically just walk the stairs to even a sixth floor just to avoid the traffic pathways that I know that COVID patients are traveling within the hospital.
Mm. Steve, I want to turn the corner just a bit and pick your brains for a few moments, though I want to make sure we save time to talk about the church, because I really want your insights about that. Because I've been doing some thinking, too, as you can imagine. It's really affecting churches, of course. But how do you think this thing's going to affect healthcare going forward from now? Any thoughts there?
Well, I think there may be a societal change in the way we view the need to try to prevent infecting one another with disease. Clearly, we have flu seasons every year that do kill thousands, tens if not hundreds of thousands of people every year. And there are practices that we're starting to adopt as a society to meet the COVID crisis that may persist past that, especially given some of the ways we're phasing in our return to normal life, which include not having it all be as normal as it was before.
Right, right.
So shaking hands may change, and our desire to conduct some business virtually with virtual meetings where in the past people either weren't thinking about doing that or weren't as familiar with how to accomplish that. They've been forced now to identify mechanisms to do that, and that may persist.
Folks, you're listening to an interview with Dr. Steve Pinson. He's a friend. He's a founding elder of our church, Epiclesis, also a local anesthesiologist with 30 years of experience. We're talking about, well, you know what, COVID-19 and all of the ramifications there. Steve was just talking about how this might change society, and I can't help but think of some good things that may result and also some potentially really scary ones as we turn now our attention to the church. You've been a believer a long time. You've been a leader in various churches. What's this going to do to the church, Steve?
Well, we can look to history to try to get some sense of that. This is not the first pandemic that has affected church life. Way back in 250-ish AD, there was a plague of Cyprian, and that was causing up to 5,000 deaths a day in Rome. And many people were fleeing Rome. And at that point, there were only about 1.2 million believers on earth, and Christians were called to the task and felt the need to minister to those that were sick. Rather than fleeing from the crisis, they were called to serve others. And as a consequence of people seeing that service of Christ living through people in the world, the Christian community rose to nearly 6 million people in a short period of time.
Our brothers and sisters stood firm, didn't they?
They did.
Well, I think this current pandemic gives us at least similar opportunities, and hopefully we'll stand firm as well. I keep encouraging folks to be the church, And that may be hard when you're sheltering in place, but it leads me to want to talk to you a little bit about fear, because fear is not a hallmark of the Christian experience. It's not one of the fruits of the Spirit, right? So we need not to be fearful, but we also need to be cautious and wise. Is this one of those places where faith and your scientific background come together? And if so, describe that. What's that like when rivers of different sources begin to flow together in a particular issue?
No, I think that's an interesting question. There have clearly been different approaches to the COVID-19 crisis within the church community.
Right.
There have clearly been some churches that, either because their state governments have permitted or encouraged group gatherings still to be occurring, or there have been rogue populations even in states where that's been discouraged that continue to meet. The Christian Medical Dental Association has actually put out a statement on that, saying that we need to be wise, that our governments have put in place with authority that's been granted to them with God's permission. And within that, we need to be wise and follow the guidance that's going to be effective for the community's healing. But we don't need to be fearful in the process.
Right, right, right.
We know from Romans 8:28 that all things God does works together for the good of those who love him. And we don't need to be fearful.
No, because part of our calling is to participate with him in his purposes for the world. And surely ministering to people in a tough time is part of that, yeah?
Yes. We know that there will be trouble in this world, but we don't need to fear.
Which reminds me, I want to pick your brains a little bit here in a minute about people being at home with or comfortable with or able even to talk or think about their own mortalities. That's a subject I want to talk with you about in just a minute. But back to the church, as you think about this thing and the way, well, it has affected our church, and you're looking at how it's affecting other churches, what's another way or two that you think may affect the church moving forward? What's this going to look like?
Well, I suppose it depends on what the expectations of the church congregation and the expectations that the pastoral direction and leadership of the church are putting forward to their congregation. there's a period of time here where people are not going to have the experience of coming together as a physical body. You know, the church gathered on Sunday, the church scattered between our church gatherings. Is that something that people are going to recognize as something that they need to resume is certainly a question. We were not created to be isolated beings.
Right.
God created Adam, and then he said, no, you need a helpmate, and he created Eve. Jesus didn't send the disciples out on their own. He sent them out to the towns in pairs. We know that Jesus said that we're two or more are gathered, the Lord is there.
Right.
And so we were designed to be in community with one another. And we have the opportunity as we recover from this COVID crisis to either embrace the church body and the fellowship that's intended by God, or to fall away from it, to say, I've been focusing on me during this time of self-isolation, and my time has been such and such, to be very self-centric about
right.
our isolated time away from the church body. And I don't think that's what God intends for his bride, the church.
I agree. It occurs to me that folks who have been in churches where they have been conditioned to think of what happens there as a consumer, that I'm consuming a product or service, may discover at the end of all this that they didn't, quote, need the product as much as they thought they did. Or if they want to get it somewhere else, they can do so, sort of Amazon-like, right? I can choose some other church service or some other, quote, product or service. But it occurs to me that there's at least one similarity in your medical field and in that of the Christian world, and that is maybe going forward, virtual encounters will expand or continue, certainly continue, but there's always going to be a need for folks to see each other, right? For a physician to put hands on a patient, yes?
Oh, I think so. Touch is so very, very important. Jesus hugged the children. He kissed the lepers. We know from our own psychological studies, when you're at the cashier and you actually just even accidentally touch the cashier's hand in making a transaction, your impression and their impression of you is raised just psychologically from that physical encounter. People who are in solitary confinement in prisons do not do well. We are designed to be in community and touching each other.
Yeah.
That's hopefully something that we won't abandon in the midst of our recovery from the COVID.
I certainly hope not. I'm a hugger. You know that about me. And it's just been very hard. I've only gotten to hug my wife and my dog. And so it's been kind of lonely over here. Folks, you're listening to an interview with Dr. Steve Pinson. He's a friend and a physician, a longtime anesthesiologist in this town. And I'm proud to say that he's joining us today, carving out some time for us to talk about, well, his profession and the medical industry, healthcare, and also the church and how things might look as we move forward. Steve, I'd like to end by asking you something about this, and it's something that I really would love to have your thoughts, because it's not only what medical and scientific, but it's also philosophical, which you handle beautifully, by the way. And that is someone's own sense of mortality. Do you think that some of the fear in this, particularly for North Americans and our mindset, is being completely unfamiliar with having to think about our own mortality?
Absolutely. Okay. Many of us through this crisis have not only had to think about our mortality in a theoretical sense, but many of us may have known somebody who actually was personally affected, or one of their family members have been personally affected by this. So it does bring into people's consciousness the thought of, gee, what happens when I die? And that may become more of a reality for people in the process of this. So that's an important factor. It can drive people to think about God. It can also drive people to decide, why would God allow such a thing to happen in the world? And both of those scenarios are opportunities for believers to minister and educate people who are asking these questions about,
yes,
what happens when I die,
mm-hmm,
and why do bad things happen to good people?
Yeah.
And those are both very important questions. It's important to be able to tell them, hey, this is a world that isn't the way God intended or created it to
yeah,
be.
Yeah.
and that there's a loving Savior that he sent to reconcile the world, to put it back the way it was supposed to be.
Yeah, my sense is that for some people, they look to government in time of crisis. And then for some of us, we look to God in time of crisis. I've talked to so many Christians who are, well, comfortable and at home with this, at least not in a fearful or panicky way, because we know where our source is.
I have experienced in the communities that I've been traveling in the same thing, that those who have a grounding in Christian belief and understanding take the current crisis much more easily because they have a hope. This is a wonderful time to feel and extend hope.
I talked to a pastor the other day who said, I kind of feel bad that I'm not feeling fearful.
And I said, we have nothing to fear.
That's right. God hath not given us a spirit of fear. Yes, that's scriptural. I got to ask you this question, Steve. Does faith and medicine belong together? Do they go together? And I'll tell you why I asked the question. I think I know anyway how you're going to answer. But back before the shutdown, I shared a painting at church. I'm not sure you were there that day. Maybe you were.
I was.
Of a young Salvador Dali painted this, I think when he was a teenager. And it's a person in their sick bed. And on one side is a nun representing faith, taking care of a child, comforting the person. And sitting on the other side of the bed is a physician, maybe taking pulse or temperature or something like that. That just struck me as a beautiful picture, at least in my mind, of how those things come together. What about you?
Oh, I absolutely think that my faith and my medical practice are integral together. Not only do I believe that that's what I was called to do, but I believe that it's a wonderful place that, given all the wherewithal that I've been given to learn the medical things that I've learned, to give back to people in a way that ministers and touches their lives in ways that gives them hope, that gives them healing, I can be an instrument of that. What a wonderful opportunity. Thank you, Lord, for blessing me with that opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve Pinson, it is a delight to have you on the program. Thank you. And let's do it again. Maybe, hopefully, we get back, quote, to normal sooner rather than later. But there may be some places along the way that you can provide some commentary or some insight that's like straight from the horse's mouth. Would you be willing to do that?
Oh, it would be my pleasure.
Great. Folks, you've been listening to an interview with Dr. Steve Pinson, friend and physician, talking about, well, faith and health and where those things come together and what things might look like after this plague has passed. Before we depart, though, I would be remiss if I didn't say we would love to have you come worship with us, well, when we could all get together again, at Epiclesis, an ancient future faith evangelical Christian church in Sacramento, California. As always, you can find more information on the web. It's epiclesis.org. That's EPICLESIS.org. There are a lot of resources there that you can listen to and watch during this time when you're cooped up at home. But again, when we get the all clear, we'd love to have you come join us there, because we're connecting today and what we're doing today as Christians with those wonderful saints who came before us from the very beginning, our brothers and sisters in the very early church. Before we gather for another episode, I want you to be thinking about this very carefully. Surely, the road to our evangelical future does run through our ancient Christian past. Until next time, the Lord be with you.
Thank you for joining us for another look at ancient future faith. There is a refreshing wind of renewal blowing through the evangelical church as more and more worshipers turn for inspiration to the rich language and pattern of the ancient church, and they're rediscovering classic Christianity and learning to draw strength from a deep well of time-tested truth and tradition. Want to experience ancient future faith for yourself? Join us for worship at Epiclesis in Sacramento on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. in the chapel at 4600 Winding Way. You can contact us by calling 916-572-9113 or online at epiclesis.org. That's 916-572-9113 or on the web at epiclesis.org.
Hi there, friends. This is Pastor Chris. One more word, please, before you go. Wanted to let you know that during this difficult time of the COVID-19 virus, we are not gathering at Epiclesis in body, but we are virtually in body because we share the same head, Jesus Christ. So if you're interested in hearing more about our virtual worship services or special small groups or prayer services, please check out epiclesis.org. That's epiclesis.org. Stay safe and the Lord be with you.